Sustainable Connections, a podcast connecting ambition to action, is brought to you by ERM, the world's largest pure-play sustainability consultancy. In this podcast, host Mark Lee, director of the Sustainability Institute by ERM, speaks with some of the most innovative and boundary-pushing minds in the field, examining the connections necessary to make sustainable business a reality across sectors and systems and up and down organizations. Topics cover the breadth of the sustainability agenda, including net zero, nature positive, biodiversity, equity, resources and frameworks, and more. This is Sustainable Connections.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sustainable Connections podcast from ERM. This is our very first episode, and I'm so excited to be launching the podcast itself, but also to be welcoming today's guests, who I'll do justice to in just a moment with proper introductions. I do want to take one moment to comment on this notion of sustainable connections first. ERM's purpose is to shape a sustainable future with the world's leading organizations, and we're committed to do that by working with others. So this concept behind connections is that the sustainability challenges that we all face are truly so vast and often so systemic that they require collaboration. The podcast is going to be designed to highlight the kinds of connections and partnership that are going on in the sustainability space that look at scaling and accelerating the work that we all need to do to hit critical milestones on the way to 2030 and the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals to 2050 and a carbon neutral economy. We're going to dig into that progressively with guests that are going to join us from all over the world. Some of them will be partners, some of them will be clients, some of them will be ERM experts. We hope the diversity will be engaging and fun, and that we'll get ideas from the folks who choose to listen about future conversations that we should have. To kick this first podcast off, I'm really lucky to be joined today by partners from WBCSD, Bayer Crop Science. So Julia Carboni is the director of the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance at WBCSD, and Jessica Christensen is the head of sustainability at Bayer Crop Science. And the two of them are here connected to one another and connected to ERM. We've just published a new report that was released at Climate Week in New York, and we'll be talking about that piece of work on natural climate solutions, as well as the Natural Climate Solutions Accelerator that is hosted within WBCSD. But in the theme of this whole connections concept, the most important part here is the people, and I want to give these people a chance to introduce themselves. So Julia, to you first, I'd just love to hear a little bit about your role at WBCSD and with the NCSA, the Natural Climate Solutions Accelerator, and really why you're doing this work. And then we'll go to Jessica. Julia.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you for the invitation. And I'm really excited to be, you know, with Jessica, the first one to break ground. So let's hope I can do justice to the great opportunity here. So I'm Julia. I'm the director of the Natural Climate Solution Alliance. So as the word says, it's an alliance with different organizations. We have around over 50 actually organizations in three main categories: businesses, NGOs, and solution providers in the space of climate, the voluntary carbon market. What is really important, exactly as you were saying, is that we created WBCSD actually and the World Economic Forum created this alliance because they understood that the scaling of the demand for natural climate solution carbon credits can only happen through collaboration in many different ways. So I'm sure I'm going to have the opportunity to tell you different ways, but And this very nature of the Natural Climate Solution Alliance is the reason why I joined WBCSD. I had a really nice job. I was working for 15 years at the IUCN, International Union for Conservation of Nature. And then this opportunity came up of connecting two of the biggest challenges that we have today: nature loss and climate change, and with the opportunity of working with the key actors that can make the difference. So I thought this was a perfect job. I mean, it's job made in heaven for me.
It's the kind of thing we all hope we stumble over. I'm so glad you seek out that kind of challenge. And we'll definitely come back to that connection between the nature, biodiversity, and climate agendas, which I think is so important. Before we go there, Jessica, please tell me a little bit about your role and how you came to be connected to the NCSA as well.
Yeah, and like Julia, very happy to be here. So thanks for having me. So as you said earlier, I'm the head of sustainability in business stewardship for Bayer Crop Science globally. And at Bayer, we're a big organization, right? We have a pharmaceuticals division, we have a consumer health division, and we have our crop science division. So I represent crop science. We are probably the biggest lever of our organization when it comes to environmental impact and opportunities. So we became a member of NCSA to scale, to go faster, right? So my role and my team's role is to really help define the strategies around sustainable intensification for crop science, not only in carbon and greenhouse gas holistically, but there's more than that. As we all know, there's co-benefits. So around water, biodiversity, we have smallholder goals for our smallholder farming community when it comes to food security and economic stability. So we have a pretty broad brush set of strategies. And as Julia commented, what we quickly realized is we can't do it alone. So if we are going to be able to accelerate, which we need to, we all need to, if we're going to be able to accelerate, we have to partner. And we have to partner with the right coalitions and the right alliances to make sure we're doing this going down the right direction of how we're executing and how we're moving forward. So really happy to be here and be part of this group as well, and to talk more about the CEO guide as well as other topics.
Great. Well, welcome both. And again, thanks so much. So we've got WBCSD, we've got Bayer Crop Science, we've got the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance, and together with also WEF and our part ERM, we've just produced and released in New York the Natural Climate Solutions CEO Guide. Julia, maybe I can come to you again first as the director of the program. Why the guide? Why now? You know, why was this sort of an early endeavor for the Alliance?
Yeah, so thank you, Mark. Well, we thought it was really important to capture some of the learnings of the NCSA developed in the first 2 years, which we are very much focused in understanding how a business is could and should use natural climate solution voluntary carbon credits in their journey to net zero. And as you can imagine, it's not an easy answer. There are a lot of different discussions with a lot of organizations, processes such as SBTI, Race to Zero. We consider a number of different perspectives, risk that we have right now of undermining the decarbonization efforts, but also the opportunity that nature brings. So bringing all this together took a couple of years of discussions, and the guide that we have launched with you in New York really crystallizes the key positions that NCSA, so the NCS Alliance, has taken vis-a-vis to what we consider the let's say, high ambition pathway for businesses, which is basically to decarbonize first, basically, but on a yearly basis, counterbalance also their unabated emissions. So go beyond decarbonization. And the second message is to do that by purchasing high quality natural climate solution carbon credits. There is a lot to unpack there, but I'm sure we are going to have an opportunity to unpack what high quality NCS means.
Yeah, I think, Julia, that our listeners will want us to unpack that right away. So, you know, you've kind of gone down this path on high quality, and there's no question that folks looking at the guide and wondering about this will have the word offsets ringing in their ears. And the debate around offsets has been troubling, right? There are accusations of how and they're being used and whether they should be. And then there's this question of quality. And I think you're trying to emphasize that there's a way to do it right as part of a larger plan. So, Julia, can you go a bit farther on the high quality question? And then, Jessica, I'd love to hear how this fits as part of Bayer's plan and approach. Julia?
Yeah. So the high quality goes back to the definition of a natural climate solution. So it's not just working with nature. And, you know, we have a lot of examples of projects that plant trees. What we are saying is a natural climate solution is actually an intervention that addresses climate change, by defining a biodiversity gains and bringing social and economic benefits to the community with a plan to create climate mitigation results. But so basically you can't generate climate mitigation results and without having biodiversity gains and without empowering and creating opportunities for people. And this is very different than do no harm. This is going positive. The do no harm is has to always be there, but is not the do positive is not a nice to have, is a must have in order to really generate this positive contribution that nature can make to climate. Otherwise, the positive contribution is going to be very ephemeral, is going to be time limited. Well, we know that ecosystem services are only delivered by strong, you know, in presence of biodiversity. And this is basically the message of a natural climate solution. So this is the high quality we're promoting. We're saying to businesses that invest and purchase natural climate solution carbon credits that they have to really also make an effort in understanding not only the carbon integrity, but also the biodiversity gains and the social gains, which is complex. And this is also where we are saying it's not about purchasing, you know, credits at the supermarket. These are projects. These are incredible programs on the ground, which involve people. This is where companies also have to change their mindset for doing this and engage in partnerships, have long-term relationship with this, you know, the communities and the project developers, and really work with them in creating value for them through the carbon credits, but also for the communities that are going to find a new way of doing business. They're becoming steward of the land and they're making a business out of it, which is an incredible opportunity for all.
So that, I love the bundle that I'm hearing about there, that not only are we guaranteeing a high quality carbon outcome, but it comes with a biodiversity element and with a social benefit as well, which takes it kind of a good deal farther. So Jessica, if you interpret it in the same way, I'm curious to hear you talk about that package. And for any company thinking about the complexity of its climate strategy and then what it has to implement to deliver it, there are choices to make. So why choose natural climate solutions and how do they fit into the plan that you're part of marshalling at Bayer Crop Science?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with what Julia laid out. Let me give you a real example from our lens as a big multinational company. So at Bayer, we absolutely have a net zero targets, just like many companies do. And initially we had said, you know what, we need to be net zero by 2050. And so from a carbon landscape, we're looking at scope 1 and 2 emissions. Those would be our upstream, our own operation and upstream. So we've invested a lot and continue to talk about avoidance. So we need to do our job and do better at what we do from our own product supply engine, right? And it's a big one. So we have crop protection products, we have manufacturing facilities, we have seed production areas that touch a lot of environmental resources. So we've made a ton of improvements in that space and we continue to invest in that. And likewise, downstream, scope 3, what we call downstream is our farmer communities, our out in the field. So what can we influence there? We don't have control over all their decisions, but we certainly can influence the portfolio designs, the agronomic practices. We can incentivize farmers to adopt sustainable practices that will help achieve these climate neutrality goals. To do that, we have very specific targets of our scope 1 and 2, our own upstream footprint of a 42% reduction by 2029, and then nearly a 12.5% reduction of scope 3 downstream by that same timeframe. That's to keep us on track for carbon neutrality by 2050. But we understand that's not good enough. And so that's where the high quality nature-based carbon credits come into play. So what we're doing is working in parallel. So we're actually purchasing offsets today on the market to complement our own avoidance strategy. So we are prioritizing investments on avoidance and then secondarily removal. And so we invest in some of these lighthouse projects that Julia mentioned that are very country or community specific. But we also have our own carbon business model that we're launching. So we're paying farmers to adopt climate smart practices, and then we can then have the credits that can get registered and we can actually sell on the spot market. And then the spot market itself. So working through the NCSA is, okay, what are some of those good vetted projects that we could be purchasing offsets from? So today those are almost 100% in the forest protection space, but we'd like to split and diversify that portfolio over time. The high quality part is super critical, you guys, because if they're not, then you're going to potentially have the opposite effect of what you want, where it could be climate damaging. If the market gets flooded with credits, as Julia said, I like the supermarket analogy, Julia, you can't just go to your online shopping cart and pick out some carbon offset credits, right? Like you do need to understand what they're linked to, need to understand the permanence of them, where are they really coming from? Are they science-based, vetted from a targets initiatives, data initiatives? So all of those things matter. At Bayer, we're doing both in parallel because we know we need to move faster as the global kind of entity, right? But as Bayer and ourselves, our goal is to get to climate neutrality much faster than 2050. And to do that, we need to march in parallel both with our own operations as well as purchasing offsets and supporting these projects that have the climate benefits.
Okay. You've just done an amazing job taking something incredibly complex and breaking it down into lots of component parts. And it's still hard to get my head around. And I kind of swim in this lane as well. So there's so much going on. I wonder if we could make this a bit more specific by you, Jessica, telling us about one of the Lighthouse projects that you've come to be involved in. And then, Julia, I'd love to hear about the vetting, because I think that'll be one of the questions on people's minds. Jessica, is one of the investments playing out enough that you can give us that example?
Yeah, so one of the Lighthouse projects and areas we're investing in right now is around looking at long-term permanence type solutions such as biochar. So we're working with different companies and regions in this space. And biochar basically is a way to give back to the soil, right? How do you accelerate and capture more carbon in the soil faster, right? So there's lots of investments in startup companies and technologies, and there's lots of projects that are ongoing in specific countries that can have a big impact. So that's just one example, but we definitely do a lot with in the forest space too, with different collaborations in Brazil. We have lots of different Lighthouse projects country by country, honestly, that we're taking a look at.
Fantastic. And Julia, I know the interest in the vetting will be incredibly high. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that's working and why people should find it reassuring in the way that they need to?
Yeah. So we have, as NCS Alliance, a program that is supposed to, is there to promote stories from, a number of projects. And the idea was to create trust in the businesses that want to purchase to explain what is an NCS project, right? Because it's become so difficult to have a conversation without the details. So we said, okay, let's research what are, good projects out there that actually have demonstrated that they have biodiversity gains, social gains, and of course, carbon integrity. So these are the Lighthouse program that the NCS Alliance has. We have criteria that very much match the criteria that are used by CORSIA, which is the airline, accreditation system. And therefore, we only take basically projects that have been validated and verified by one of the carbon programs that has been accredited by CORSIA. I know it's a little complicated, but at the end of the day, we are back to certification because it is important that there have to be systems that certify that the project has been implemented according to plans, that has delivered according to plans. Now, the only challenge we have at the moment, well, no, there are plenty more than one. Sorry. One of the challenges we have right now is that most of the methodologies that are out there to measure the carbon generated by these interventions, being a project, a forest protection, a restoration projects, or a soil management, focus on the carbon accounting and integrity, but do not look into how much biodiversity was generated and social benefits. This is not because they don't care, I think. It's simply because it's very complex. Not that carbon is not complex, but as you know, biodiversity is even more complex because there isn't one metric to define what is the gain of biodiversity. You know, easily in this conversation that we're having, Mark, I said biodiversity gains, easy. But then if you ask me what that means, don't ask me what that means, because I won't be able to tell you in one sentence. So anyway, at the moment, what we are doing is actually we are not vetting projects. We are, highlighting good stories. We are saying that we are not actually endorsing any of these, but these are all projects that actually have received, verification and have been accredited by very reputable programs. What we are doing, however, is to come up with an NCS procurement guide, basically giving a tool to the companies like Bayer and all others that are trying to procure credits from projects, but also not just looking at the carbon integrity, but also the biodiversity and social aspect, with a series of questions that they can use to start the conversation with the project developer. And therefore, with that, understand how much these projects are also generating in terms of biodiversity gains and social benefits, with the hope that in the future will develop in something more formal. But at the moment, we are not in the position of creating anything too formal. There are a lot of other movements in the sector, such as the Integrity Council, that is trying to establish like a benchmark approach to assess existing carbon programs. So at the moment, we are letting that process get to the end and finish its process, finish its journey, and then we'll see what we need to add in terms of biodiversity and social aspects.
Yeah, there are so many parts. And one of the things that I try and sit with is that if we want to solve these incredibly difficult problems, the solutions are going to be complicated and we're going to be figuring them out over time. And there's probably going to be a good degree of testing and failing. And maybe the notion of testing and experimenting is where my next question will lead us. So we've been talking about natural climate solutions, and we've referenced that a CEO guide has just been published. In your introductions, we also talked about the fact that, Julia, you're the director of the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance. And then there's also an accelerator. And so I'm picturing the Alliance and the accelerator as the places where stuff gets tested and maybe gets broken, but things eventually get done. So Julia, can you explain the Alliance? And Jessica, you're an early member of the accelerator, and maybe you can talk to us about the accelerator. Julia?
Yeah, so the Alliance is really there to create these tools and approaches by bringing together not just the business and not just the solution providers, but the 2+ conservation organizations that often played a very critical role in the development of this project as technical assistants. So the 3 groups are really fundamental to generate good, natural climate solution credits. And at the early stage, when we start thinking about how do we accelerate, how we create this demand, because the aim of the NCS Alliance is to catalyze demand for high quality, we realize right away that we can't have a conversation only with businesses, because the solution is not just about the demand. It's really about bringing demand and supply and all the players together. So that's how we created this group. We have a lot of organizations that are part of it. And what I say is often, this is a group of like-minded organizations and like-minded individuals that believe that NCS can make a difference in climate change and can also make a difference in reversing the loss of biodiversity. And together we are developing tools. So for example, the guide that we have done together is part of our work stream focusing on awareness raising. So we do that. We do, for example, webinars for national association to help them understand the voluntary carbon market and how NCS carbon credits fit in the voluntary carbon market, with examples, testimonials. You guys are always, ERM is always there speaking about the business case, and then we are talking about the procurement. Then we have one other stream, which is the accelerator. Jessica will explain a little bit more about that. And then, of course, we have also the work on tools, basically giving instruments to those businesses that actually are investing to help them make the choice. So the NCS procurement guide, which will launch as a draft at COP27 in a month time, that's one example of the tool that we are developing.
Great. I love hearing that the tools are coming that quickly. And I also really appreciate that the Alliance is multi-sector from the get-go. I think it's going to be all the more powerful for that. So Jessica, if that's the Alliance, the Accelerator is an element or one of the things happening within that, why have you signed up as one of the pioneers really within the Accelerator?
Yeah, I think we early on realized that we have to send a very strong signal from an agricultural industry standpoint, as well as across industries. So for us, you know, being an early pioneer in the Accelerator Fund is you literally need to invest. You have to invest resources to make this happen, right? And to do that, that's what we want others to join in as well, because Julia said it, we realized we needed a lot more expertise than just what we have internally. And we need an alliance and in a safe space, if you will, to come together to experiment. I think mm-hmm. this test and learn phase, we can't wait for perfect. There was a great discussion on that during the panel review during Climate Week. You can't wait for perfect because the situation is dire. So, but we do need a structure and a place that's a good environment for us to test and learn. So some of this is a hedge a little bit. If you're a big company like Bayer, you're investing, are you going to get your full return on investment? Probably not in every situation, right? But the long game, you will. And so it's really, how do we start speeding up? What do we need to do? What are the resources we need to put in? Who are the partners that need to come to the table to actually drive the Alliance objectives? And I will say on Julia's comment around the biodiversity angle. So as in my job, I look for projects and efforts that really have all those co-benefits. We need as many sort of auxiliary ecosystem type impacts that we can get. So carbon, water, you know, genetic diversity, soil health, you know, the biodiversity bucket is very broad. Each company defines it a little differently. We all have our own objectives, but it does actually sync together. So having alliances, even though we don't have biodiversity metrics all figured out, having these alliances in place, having the opportunity to test concepts together will accelerate that as well. I think my hope is, and our hope is, that we can accelerate on the ecosystem front, the biodiversity front, faster than how we did with carbon, right? Because we are kind of anchoring off of carbon, but we're all working together now more holistically. So in general, the Accelerator we're super passionate about, because literally you just have to put resources down. You have to commit to it. And the more of us that do that, the faster this will go.
Yeah. And there's a sense in what you said of these are long-term investments. They're going to enhance the long-term resilience of our organization. Yeah. But we're making these long-term investments with urgency now. I liked the can't wait element of what you said also. I'm going to try and tie a couple things together on our way out of the conversation. The time we've had today has flown by. So you've both talked about the connection between climate and biodiversity. The report, the CEO guide on NCS that was launched in New York in September happened at Climate Week. There are two big further events on the agenda coming up through the course of the fall. There's, of course, COP27 in Egypt, the climate COP, but there's also COP15 in Montreal, the biodiversity COP. I think they're as connected as the parts of our conversation are today. We could see by the fact that the event that we were able to host in Manhattan, it was wildly oversubscribed. There's interest in these topics. So as you look forward into the fall and think about furthering natural climate solutions and maybe furthering the connection between the climate and biodiversity agendas, what are you hoping we realize by the time that we're tipping towards 2023? Jessica, I'll come to you first this time.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with this is how do we work together in a much different way than we historically have? And so we've talked about alliances and coalition, private public sector kind of partnerships. We also have to have policy impacts. So if you think about the enabling environment for all of this work, it's got to go to that regulatory and policy piece too at a country level. So when we have meetings and venues and opportunities like the COPs, you talked about COP15 coming up, which is very, very much focused on biodiversity. those are the opportunities for alliances such as the NCSA to show up, as a coalition, right? It's not Jesse from Bayer speaking about what our objectives are. It's truly a broad brush coalition. I think the hope that we have is that helps us enable faster too and break down some hurdles and roadblocks to actually execute at a grower level and from our lens, right? Because a lot has to happen to enable downstream, if you will. So that's my hope. And I think, you know, as I said earlier, if we can start and anchor off of carbon credits and these voluntary markets and make sure they're high carbon credits, hopefully we'll be able to expedite the co-benefits of that with biodiversity and get more movement on the other aspects much, much faster.
Yeah, if we anchor well and can use that to move faster, as you're implying there, then I think we'll be in good stead, or I hope we will be. That's in my category of hope. Julia, how about you?
So I think, well, first of all, as Jessica suggested, the NCS Alliance will be present at both events as a coalition. My job as a director is to try to find as many opportunities for the Alliance to be present, for the members of the Alliance to speak and share our common message. This is where I go back to the original question. Why did we do the guide? Is also to give the members basically a common message to share. So this is our message. These are the two main messages that we will share with any business out there and say, invest in addition to complement and add on to your decarbonization in high quality natural climate solution carbon credits. But for me, what is really important is that more and more there is a coming together of these two worlds. And there are two worlds. I tell you, I come from the conservation tribe, as I tell myself and people, and I entered the climate tribe a year ago. And honestly, it was really different and difficult. I didn't know anybody. And even if I was working with same company, really different people and in the same company. And then I realized that natural climate solution can help make that connection even within the companies and help the companies connect their biodiversity, climate, and social strategies. And, you know, and that will also help them create opportunities, you know, cross-fertilization, economies of scale, even for creating investments on the ground that they don't have to do three type of investments. They can start being creative and create one big investment that addresses all the issues. So that's for me, the opportunity for the future is to connect these agendas at the corporate level, on the ground, and at the policy level.
That is pretty much a perfect wrap up to our first Sustainable Connections podcast, Julia. You've talked about people who've been tribal and maybe too disparate and crossing the lines in between them. I'm minded of, you know, music artists who were country for much of their career and then cross over and do a pop album. We need more crossover artists like you, and we need more pioneers like Jessica who are willing to take their companies down this path. For everybody who's listened in, this is the Sustainable Connections podcast. I'm Mark Lee. I've been talking to Julia Carbone and Jessica Christensen. The report we've been talking about is Natural Climate Solutions and the Voluntary Carbon Market, a guide for C-suite executives. Dig in there if you'd like to learn more. And thanks so much for listening. Hi again, everyone. We're continuing our first episode of the Sustainable Connections podcast. I'm here with my colleague, Aista Brackley, who I have had the pleasure of working with for the better part of a decade now. And Aista, maybe you can introduce yourself in a bit more full.
Thank you, Mark. I'm Aista Brackley. I'm the Associate Director at the Sustainability Institute by IRAM, and I'm delighted to be here as part of the first episode of our podcast. I'm based in the Bay Area, and just like Mark said, we've been working together for many years, and I think this podcast will be just a great contribution to the conversation that's happening in the field.
Sure hope so. The podcast, Aista, has this connections theme, and Julia is at WBCSD, where she's embedded in the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance. She's the director of it. But WBCSD has been like an essential partner to ERM over so many years. ERM was actually a founding member of the WBCSD, and the Sustainability Institute by ERM, which launched in 2020, has done more than one project with WBCSD already. You've been part of each of the research pieces of work that we did with them. Can you just talk a little bit about WBCSD as a partner? And then we might go further on the notion of collaboration itself. But what's your, you know, experience been with WBCSD as a partner?
We've produced several publications. We ERM also takes part in a number of expert groups. So some of our leaders from inside ERM have an opportunity to go and be part of kind of various working groups on hydrogen, for instance, energy security, and so on. So they're really not just a long-standing collaboration that we have with WBCSD, but also on multiple topics. And I would say it's, you know, it's a partnership, obviously, that works for both sides. That's why it has been so successful for us at ERM. I think it was very interesting what Julia mentioned, the coming of tribes. You know, we really need to kind of broaden, all of us, we need to broaden our agendas and reach out to different organizations to work with. So for us at ERM, I think that has been really important with WBCSD. It's an NGO partner that brings kind of different ideas to the table, and also brings a lot of different companies and members to the table that we are able to work with.
I think, you know, you're building really the meaning of the word partnership. We've done two specific things with them over the couple of years since the Institute launched. One of them, right at the moment of our becoming an organization, was building business resilience for the Decade of Action. And then very recently, in the subject of our podcast with Julia and Jessica, we have just produced Natural Climate Solutions and the Voluntary Carbon Market, a guide for C-suite executives. So you were an author on the project. You were deeply embedded in the partnership with WBCSD, the World Economic Forum, and the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance that produced this product. What are the C-suite executives supposed to take away? If I'm a decision executive in a company and I'm curious about natural climate solutions, what's my action? What do I do with this?
The main message is that decarbonization of your value chain, wherever you are, in whatever industry and sector, is your top priority. There's no question. But it's not enough. We are well behind our climate goals, and especially 2030 is approaching really fast. And for some industries, and many of those industries we work with at ERM, decarbonization will take a long time. And all of us need to think not just about our value chains and decarbonizing them as fast as possible, but also about global climate goals. And in order to reach them, companies need to do more. And the most effective way to do that, especially before 2030, is through natural climate solutions. NCS is here. It's available. It's hugely effective at the moment, much more effective than any offsets related to technological solutions. If they can take away that message and discuss it internally within their organizations and the investment they're willing to take, that will be a big success of this guide.
Yeah, I hope for that very much, and really hope also that people have ringing in their ears what Julia and Jessica both said about the fact that this is beyond just carbon, that natural climate solutions deliver climate benefits. They also must deliver biodiversity and social, community, societal benefits along with them. I still have one final question for you today, I think, and then we'll let our first episode of Sustainable Connections kind of go into the world, which is where it belongs. And it's about the launch event that we held in New York for the new guide. So obviously co-hosted with WBCSD and the Natural Climate Solutions Alliance, we were able to hold it at KKR at their head offices in Manhattan during Climate Week. The event was wildly oversubscribed, and that just says to me something about the readiness of the moment for this topic. You were there. I just wonder if you can give us a sense of the feeling in the room and maybe what that made you think will come next.
In many ways, I think we were able to achieve, you know, a good participation and a good discussion in the room because we had, again, through partnerships and connections, we have several organizations coming together to make this happen. So, of course, we had ERM, we had WBCSD, we had Natural Climate Solutions Alliance. And at the same time, we also had KKR, the private equity majority owner of ERM. And all these organizations were able to get very different people in the room. And if we truly, and I think we touched upon it as part of the conversation with Julia and Jessica, if we want meaningful progress, we have to have all these people in the room. We need investors, we need companies, we need NGOs. The only people we didn't have in the room were policymakers, and I hope sometime in the future we will have them. So I guess that was really that. I think that describes the atmosphere in the room really well. A conversation bringing different actors together. And the other thing I will say is that, you know, while there is, I would say, you know, we're coming to the realization that 2030 goals, we probably missed a lot of them. It's really unfortunate. But there's also optimism in the room. And, you know, a lot of that optimism comes from the ability to make connections between, you know, different topics like nature, biodiversity, social issues. I think we understand much more how to tackle climate issues together with other challenges that we face in society. And with that broadening of the agenda, I think we're able to get more people on board. I think there's no question that everybody cares about nature. And by getting people to care more about nature, we're also able to do more for climate. So I think that was another really big takeaway from the event.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't necessary to accept that some of the climate goals that we set for this decade probably have slipped past us, but I think that's necessary. And that if we can kind of accept that and move on and do what we are now informed and able to do, then there's still so much opportunity for success. Appreciate also all the work that you did to make the Natural Climate Solutions and the Voluntary Carbon Market Guide come together, and just appreciate the chance to have worked with you for so long. It's fun to be on the journey together. Thanks so much, and we will wrap it up there.
To keep connecting and learn more about how ERM is shaping a sustainable future with the world's leading organizations, visit ERM.com and subscribe to the show on your platform of choice. To learn more about the Sustainability Institute, visit sustainability.com. And be sure to join us for our next episode.